The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mears does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is the highlight of Kenny Florian's week, the Anik and Florian podcast. Monday, July 29, 2019, episode 211. And if you saw Ken Flo rocking that Instagram live over the weekend, you know he is keeping it high and tight of late. This has got to be a Clark Florian initiative, keeping the hair this short. It has to be.
You know, it's hot. It's getting hot, dude. I was on the East Coast, and it was hot as hell out there. And the lettuce was long, and I said, you know what? I got to cut this damn thing. I'm doing a lot of training lately. It's hot enough having pajama tops with the kimono. So right. I had to cut it up top, man.
There's a jiu-jitsu angle, of course.
Yes.
There's a fucking jiu-jitsu angle, but that's okay. No, I've always sort of had this obsession. I've been shaving my head since I was like 15 years old. Right. I'm always telling people, you know, Zach Candido, our producer, it's like, dude, keep that hair short. Looks good. Temple looks great today. So a lot to get to today. Obviously, UFC 240 gave us a lot to talk about. So we will get into that here shortly. Ray Longo coming up in about 12 minutes and a couple picks on this UFC fight night, Covington versus Lawler. Don't forget this fight card Saturday, August 3rd from Newark, New Jersey, 3 p.m. Eastern time for the main card. So combat and coffee this weekend. But let us begin with Max Blessed Holloway. Still the standard upon which all featherweights will be judged here moving forward. He beats Frankie Edgar by unanimous decision, 50-45 times two, I believe 48-47 from the dissenting judge. A lot of layers to this fight, a lot of angles to it. Not the greatest championship fight in the world, but it certainly had its moments, Kenny. I went back and watched it this morning. And I think as the fight was going on, maybe at times it felt closer. Watching it back this morning, I can see why two judges had it 50-45. I think Frankie Edgar had his moments in the fight. But I did think it was a clean sweep upon second watch for Max Holloway, who did not have a scratch on him and emerges with his third successful defense of this undisputed title.
I agree with you. I think there was maybe a round that was close-ish, but I have no problem with the 50-45 scorecard. You know, anytime we're breaking something down and we're coming up with a prediction, you know, especially in this kind of format like we do here at the Anik and Florian podcast, you know, you have to go on what you've seen so far. And we had never seen Max Holloway go against a high-level wrestler anyway. And I think Frankie Edgar would certainly qualify, you know, being a Division I wrestler, wrestling at the ability that he's shown in the UFC and in prior years and, you know, getting a lot of big wins over the course of his career. I wasn't sure. You know, could Max Holloway stop the takedown? Yes. Have we seen him go against another high-level wrestler? No. So a lot of times you got to go on what you've seen in the past, and that's why I went the way of Frankie Edgar, and all that experience I thought was going to be a problem. But Max Holloway is just as tuned in, and it didn't matter what range Frankie wanted to fight him at. Max Holloway was just superior, and then it seemed like he got bigger and bigger as the fight went round. Like round by round, Max Holloway just seemed to just grow in size.
Yeah.
Max Holloway just always had an answer, was able to keep Frankie Edgar on the outside repeatedly, and when Frankie did get in and was pretty deep on a single, a double, or a body lock, Max Holloway had an answer yet again. So this is a guy that I really see holding onto the belt for a very long time. And I know Volkanovski said he saw some vulnerabilities in his game. But, man, I don't know if there's anybody out there at 145, you know, as far as the Volkanovskis and the other guys that are in the top five that are going to beat Max Holloway right now.
So size matters, right? We always talk about it when John Jones fights. And for me, it's always a starting off point whenever we talk about John Jones in the light heavyweight division. I feel like Ricardo Almeida's primary criticism, Kenny, of Frankie Edgar was that he just wasn't aggressive enough with the takedowns, right? Mm-hmm, in terms of the specific entries that they were looking for, single leg takedowns off of a certain side. And I think obviously you want a corner man to levy that criticism and tell you what to do, but it's easier said than done. And Max's takedown defense obviously was on point. You know, the few times when he had to sprawl to stay upright, he was able to do so. He used the fence to his advantage. The one time Frankie did take him down, he wasn't able to do anything with it. But I do believe that in the UFC in 2019, it's going to be really hard for somebody to match the frame and the length of Max Holloway. We were excited about Brian Ortega because he could match some of that size. I guess Zabit Magomed Sharipov can match some of that size. But I think the big frustration for Frankie Edgar is that he fought a pretty good fight and he still lost all five rounds. And I think you have to talk about the size at some point in time as a huge factor and just something that Frankie probably wouldn't be able to overcome if these guys fought 10 times.
Well, you know, you brought up John Jones and everyone talks about his size. There's a lot of big guys out there, John. There's a lot of guys with great size. But can they use it? That is the question. Max Holloway has the size, and he's able to use the skills necessary to get the win. So it's not just range that's the factor. It's Max Holloway and his ability to utilize that range, to utilize that jab, to know how to slip back and land a counter shot when he needs to. It just seemed that as soon as he got his range and was dominating that aspect of the fight, Frankie Edgar just couldn't get anything going. So now when you're trying to shoot, when you're trying to land shots, it throws everything off. And I'm sure that, you know, as a corner man, it could be very frustrating. But the feel of a fighter, once you're out there and you feel like you can't just get a handle on the guy and you feel like the guy's just longer than you think, and every time you try to get in relatively close, he's throwing a jab at you, or he's countering, or he's slipping his head off, it throws the whole game off. And I think that's what Frankie was experiencing. And I think he said it best after the fight. I think he said, listen, Max is just better. I think he realized that after going and there's no greater compliment from a fighter, especially one at the level pushment of a Frankie Edgar, that when he says that the other guy was just playing better, man, that says a lot.
Yeah, and I'm glad you acknowledge that in terms of Max Holloway, because he's just such a special fighter. You know, I mean, the head movement defensively, right? Just perfectly evading Frankie Edgar's shots. And there is only 1-inch discrepancy in reach. I mean, it certainly felt like a lot more than that. But you heard Holloway say, if you watched our post show on ESPN Plus, strategically lowering his level for much of this training camp. And that was obviously effective for him. All right, so we could sit here, and if we had to do write an entire A block on Max Holloway and how great he is, we could certainly do that. But in the nature of time, I do want to spin it forward when it comes to this Alexander Volkanovski fight. I think it's ambitious to think it would happen October 5th in Melbourne, Australia. That is not very far from right now, so I just don't see that happening. I think Madison Square Garden in November or even the year-end pay-per-view in December is more likely. But Alexander Volkanovski is the unquestioned number one featherweight contender. And I do think Holloway has the appetite for the fight, and he's excited to beat this guy who's on this extended winning streak. I think it's a very competitive fight, Kenny. I think Volkanovski, the former rugby league standout, I think if he gets Max Holloway up against the fence, he's strong enough to pick him up and put him on his ass, you know? So I think there are a lot of layers to this fight. He's got a ton of power on the feet. I expect Holloway to be about a 2-1 favorite, but I think Volkanovski absolutely is a live underdog. And I think with respect to probably my favorite fighter on the roster, Frankie Edgar, I think a Holloway-Volkanovski fight in 2019 is more competitive than the championship fight we saw Saturday night.
Listen, it's the fight that needs to happen. You look at everything that both those guys have accomplished. That's the fight to make. It's clear. A lot of people argued that Volkanovski should have got the first shot over Frankie Edgar, and they certainly have a case. I think Volkanovski hits a little harder than Frankie. I think that he's going to perhaps be a little bit stronger inside the clinch. But as far as technique is finishing the takedowns and things like that, I think Frankie's going to be superior there. I think he might have a little bit more experience when it comes to mixing some of the strikes together. But I think this was a great blueprint for Max Holloway to see how he would do against a guy like a Volkanovski. And I think when you're starting to amass this kind of experience, it just makes it that much more difficult for guys in the 145-pound division to beat a Max Holloway. You're going to have to throw something that's very unique and very different style-wise than a Max Holloway at this point, because now he's getting so much experience, and he's only getting better. You talked about him lowering his level change. That was evident to start off the fight. He needed to do that against the shorter Frankie Edgar and a guy who was going to attack with takedowns. And it shows that Max Holloway truly is a martial artist. This is a guy who continues to get better, and that's bad news for everyone in that featherweight division.
He was born December 4th, 1991. He is 27 years old. He is not yet 28. And he pushed out a great post sort of acknowledging Frankie Edgar and how much he has meant to his career as a motivator and otherwise. And he also expressed his disdain for the GOAT conversations that we tend to have as promoters and broadcasters and media types. I will say, my comments off the top of pay-per-view was that it's the greatest singular run in UFC featherweight history. I still think Jose Aldo can lay claim to being the greatest featherweight of all time. If you look at Conor McGregor's wins over Jose Aldo, Chad Mendes, and Max Holloway, Conor McGregor is certainly going to be a part of that conversation. But when you look at the totality, Kenny, of this Max Holloway run at 145 pounds, 14 consecutive wins, 13, and then a 149-pound win, I guess that's considered a non-featherweight win. But nobody can touch this singular streak of Max Holloway's. And I think Volkanovski's very aggressive and he will try his best. But you're right. It's been pretty special that we've all gotten to witness this. And he is potentially just getting started. So as far as Frankie Edgar is concerned, I don't think he's going to drop down to the bantamweight division. I think the Cejudo fight was really the only one that he had an appetite for because Cejudo took out his teammate Marlon Moraes. But Frankie also said, Kenny, he's not going anywhere. And this is a guy who made his UFC debut, I think, in 2007. He's been at this a long time. But I don't think he needs to go anywhere. I don't know how you feel about it. I think Frankie Edgar is still very competitive in the featherweight top 10. I think this is the division in which he should stay. There are super fights out there, I think, potentially. Your thoughts on Frankie Edgar moving forward as active UFC fighter?
I couldn't agree more. I think Frankie Edgar still has a lot more in the gas tank to give. I think going five rounds against a guy like a Max Holloway says a lot. That was something that Brian Ortega and many others weren't able to do at 145 pounds. I think, it says a lot about his durability at this point in his career. I think Frank Giger is still very much a driven individual. He loves training. He loves fighting. I think is a guy that should consistently be one of the bigger names in the 145-pound division as far as a guy that the UFC can rely on to be a main event somewhere very least, and one of these fight nights. So Frankie Edgar is a legend. He will go down as one of the best to ever do it. And I do think that he still has a lot more left in his gas tank. And I would love to see some awesome fights in the future. And I think he's going to give that. And I think they're all going to be at 145 pounds.
I mean, the co-main event coming up this weekend is Jim Miller and Clay Guida, right? Still getting a high profile slot at this stage of their respective careers, not contender types, right? And I agree, man. I think Frankie Edgar headlining UFC fight nights and do yourself a favor, go look at the featherweight rankings. The division is as healthy as it gets, and there are a lot of big fights ahead for Frankie Edgar. That's a tough moment, man, seeing his son Santino walk into the octagon, Ken Flo, as a father. That's about as close to crying on the air as I've come. But, man, dude, Holloway, not a fucking scratch on his face, I mean, not a scratch.
That's what's so impressive, right, is to go five rounds and – to not have any damage at all. This was such a welcome change because, and the other thing, to be frank, to be candid, was the damage that he took in that fight against Dustin Poirier, John. I don't like seeing any fighter take that kind of damage. And when you have such a fighter of such high quality and Max Holloway take that kind of a damage, not only was it impressive on the side of Dustin Poirier to what he did, but also it got me worried about his defense. And here he is. He came in a completely different fighter. I mean, his defense looked very good. He was in the proper range at all times. And this is a guy, again, in Frank Edgar, with a ton of experience who has knocked out a few great fighters in his day. And Max Holloway looked like he wasn't even a fight. He was fresh as a daisy. And as far as getting that turnaround in October, John, if he wanted to, I say he could. If they don't do it, it'll be probably because of the UFC side of things. Maybe they want another main event or another fight in there. But I think he could do it potentially,
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that angle, the value of Holloway and Volkanovski as a headlining act on its own, right? Because that stadium show in Melbourne is going to sell out in minutes, right? Sure. Regardless of whether or not Volkanovski's in that co-main event slot. Certainly that would bolster that as a championship doubleheader. But I think you're right. That is only 10 weeks from right now. In talking to Max on the post show on ESPN Plus, I didn't get the inkling that he wanted to turn around for October 5th, and he has certainly earned the right to make that decision. Yes. I felt like it was interesting that after the fight on April 13th, he said he knew all along that he was going to be defending the featherweight title in July, right? And that wasn't all that long ago, right? And I know Tyron Woodley expressed concern to Max privately when he accepted the July fight. Was like, dude, you just went five rounds with Dustin. You sure you don't want
hard
a little bit more time? Right.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, Max Holloway, man, just an absolute stud, and Frankie Edgar a stud in defeat. We congratulate Max Holloway, and it is now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
And the great Ray Longo joins us now live. Ray, you were not in Uluka Sasaki's corner over the weekend, right? You were not in Far East Asia?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I had sent Aljo, I tell you, because I think my long trip days might be coming to an end.
Ooh, how about that? That's breaking news.
That's breaking news, yeah. I got a couple left, I guess. But I tell you, the last trip to Japan just jacked my hip up so bad that I was like, buddy, I'm sending you an Aljo.
Yeah, might be time to shred that passport. So, Uluka Sasaki, Ryzen, he goes down by north-south choke. Were you watching that fight live in the middle of the night or what?
No, I didn't watch it live. I saw. I actually only saw the replay. I think he got kneed in the head, and then he got put in a north-south. I mean, I think the knees, you know, when Ryzen, you can knee to the head on the floor. It was pretty brutal.
Oh, man. I'll have to read about that and maybe try to watch it after the fact.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't just that. He got kneed. He went, I forget what happened, but he took a couple of knees to the head instead of like, now you got, you know, Kenny, like the old days when you would just swing back to guard.
Of course. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Now you got to go old school with this stuff. Now
man.
You got your head right there. Yeah. It was pretty bad.
So were you able to watch UFC 240? And if so, your thoughts on Max Holloway and your guy, Frankie Edgar?
Yeah, it was, look, I watched it, you know, man, it was hard, you know, heartbreaking at the end, man, when Frankie brought his kid in there. He's such, you can see he's emotionally just, he's such a good dude, man. Even in the post-press fight, you could see just everything is heartfelt and, you know, he really wanted to win and anybody could say that, but for some reason, when he's saying it, just, it's different. He's just a good guy. Yeah. I think he's loved by everybody. And, you know, look, he made it, you know, somewhat competitive, but just not enough. You know, Holloway's, you know, a step ahead, and that was it. But, you know, it was a nice effort. And you know, for Frankie, I still believe, and I think the only thing that I'm sad about that when I was watching it was like, you know, he's 37, Max is 27. Max is phenomenal. I love the guy. I mean, and I think Frankie, you know, even said that. What a true representative of the sport and everything else. But I really would have liked to seen a 31-year-old or a 32-year-old Egner in there with him instead of a 37-year-old. That's the only thing, you know. But with all the stuff that goes on and the waiting and postponements, before you know, you look, you're 34, you turn around, you're 37. So I would have liked to have seen the younger guy. Look like he might have slowed down a little bit, but you know, still, you just, it's just it more, he's more a metaphor for life. Like, it's like, again, it's not going to stop him. He's always trying. There was, you know, he was just, I don't know, it's just there was a lot in there.
Right.
But, and I do believe, Kenny, he's going to beat 90% of the other people. He's going to have trouble with the upper echelon.
When you see a guy in Frankie Edgar and you've been around him, you've been around his trainers, and you know this is a guy that when he says he trains for a fight, he's done everything possible to win that fight. This is a guy that doesn't cut corners. Frankie coming up short, I think, is what makes it so difficult to see him lose.
No, yeah. And again, I think what you said is right. Like, yeah, there's just no bullshit in that guy. I think, you know, you're not hearing anything bullshitty. It's all sincere. It's from his, coming right from his soul. And even when he said, look, I just feel like I let my team down. They put a lot into it too. Like, people could say that, but I felt he really meant that. And I know those guys, so I know that's true anyway. But that was just, that was tough. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people were pulling for Frankie and yeah, he's just a good dude. And, you know, like, again, I do believe you know, he could beat 90% of the people out there. I really do. I don't think nothing's going to happen. But, what else does he want to accomplish? He was a champion. You know what I mean? So he was a champion at 55. He's fought the best of the best. He's fought everybody. You know, it can only, you know, come down to, like, the thrill, the love of competition. And, you know, it's a nice paycheck. And he's got a family I'm sure he wants to take care of. But, I mean, he's another guy. He's just got... That's a Hall of Famer for sure, and he's got absolutely nothing to prove. But I do believe he loves competing. And, yeah, Kenny, I think what you said is right. You know he's doing everything, and that's kind of the – in a way, that's a good thing, and it's a sad thing because I just don't think it was enough, no matter what he did, to beat a Max Holloway, who's just a phenomenal fighter, and his length and the way he can, you know, maintain his distance and range is phenomenal. His takedown defense was great. It was good. I enjoyed the fight. It was, like, bittersweet, but it was good.
Edgar's last shot at an undisputed UFC title was when he was 31 years old, believe it or not, in 2013. He did fight Jose Aldo at UFC 200 in 2016 for an interim belt. But to your point, Ray, in terms of Mark Henry and everybody on down, this is just going to be a tough one that's going to have a lasting effect because it had been 6 years since they had fought for an undisputed belt. Frankie Edgar is the first fighter he ever trained. He's family. And I think you just really saw, to your point off the top, how badly they wanted this one for legacy and everything else.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think I texted you when I was doing good. When his kid came into the octagon, I just started crying.
That was tough.
I don't know. It's just, you know, for anybody, but more so for him. But, you know, the stuff with... you know, your family is always rough, you know, especially when they start flashing. If something bad happens to you and they flash, you know, like off screen and you see your wife or somebody, your mother or father, it's nutty, man. But you know, he's a good dude. And like, again, I think he told you exactly the way he feels. He's not going to let it deter him. He'll be back. Like, again, that question to me is, you have absolutely nothing to prove. You like fight. I'm sure, like, I do believe, you know, he's just a bad fight for anybody who's not willing to really get pressed. I mean, he never stopped trying.
Right.
You know, he was landing combos. You know, he was catching them at the end of his combos. The right hand over the top looked good. He was leg kicking, just, you know, not enough. That's it. It was a good fight. And his legacy to me is already in cement.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, we teased it last week. Chris Weidman indeed getting the main event slot at TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts against Dominic Reyes. And they've gone back and forth a little bit on social media, but I expect it to be pretty civil between those two. But I will say, Ray, and I'm not saying this to be funny, you know me as a Boston guy who bleeds green and everything else. I feel like it's my civic duty to try to get all of New England, like, against you guys in this fight. I really do.
Wait, hold on. Wait, Kenny. I think this way he's Kenny, can we reel him back in, Ken? Do you even know who Cole Yastrzemski is?
You know who he is. Goddamn right. Number 8
you
in
know
your
Ted
fucking
Williams,
program.
Ted, you ever see the special on? I love those guys. I was a big Yaz fan. Tony Canigliaro, you know who he is?
Of course, Tony C. Come on.
I love Team
Sarah
Longo. I'm going to say something on the air. I love Boston. So I say you can't turn Boston against me.
Okay.
And my baseball acumen from like 1950 to 1980 will blow anybody away.
Anik, he just killed you with kindness. How do you counter that?
That was actually a great reply right there. Dropping Yaz up in here. Jesus.
I'm gonna tell you a quick funny story. I had years ago, this is 30 years ago, I knew a guy who was a scout for the Cardinals when Bob Gibson was pitching. So we'll go maybe even way back because he's way older than me. I don't think he's around anymore. But, you know, he would say they would always bring in the prospects and have them talk to the team psychologist. And one guy that didn't make it for whatever team of what he was scouting for, but went on to become somebody really pretty big, was Jim Rice. He said they turned him down because of a site. Yeah. Oh, like, again, it could be bullshit, but obviously Jim Rice was a great baseball player. But Ted Williams, buddy, did you ever just listen to that guy talk on how he broke everything down? And look at his books on how to hit baseballs. It's phenomenal.
Absolutely. I was a sports
radio.
You will not turn
Boston against me.
I was a longtime sports radio guy in Boston. You can be sure I, at one point, did some extensive homework on Ted Williams. And Ken Flo likes you dropping that Jim Rice, right? Because that was probably his prime as a Red Sox fan in the 1980s. Number 14, Jimmy Rice. All right, well, I won't try to turn all of New England against you. I can't promise, though, that I haven't already reached out to Dominic Reyes. You know, I mean, dude, it's very interesting because mixed martial arts is such a global sport that it's like, oh, you take the Long Islander and, you know, he can drive to the fight in Boston and, you know, but I don't know. I just, the New York Boston rivalry is such that I'm having a little bit of a hard time with this, and I'm not.
Hey, you know, I heard through the grapevine, I don't even know if it's true, that Dominic Reyes was out on Long Island this weekend. Evidently, he went to, I think he went to Stony Brook. He played football.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he did. Yep.
That was crazy. Yeah, somebody called me and said, I think he was in Franklin Square or something. So,
oh, wow. So he's got some dark ties as well.
He's already doing his recon work.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I'm very curious to see that fight, obviously. I mean, definitely a challenge on your hands. And also excited to see, you know, who will have the crowd. It'll probably be Weidman, much to my dismay. But we'll see.
Oh, Boston. I love you, Boston.
There you go. Logo trying to get it on his side. All right, man. Well, have a great week. Unless you got anything else, we will let you go hit pads and push sleds.
That's it, man. I love it. I will talk to you guys next week, and you guys always make my Monday morning.
Get up, Ray. Have
Thank
a good
you, buddy.
One, man.
Right. Take it easy, guys.
There he is, Raymond Peter Longo, staple of the Anakin Florian podcast dating to episode 1. Oh, you know I'm going to stay on this just for a minute, Kenny, because you know I'm – very impassioned about this, and I get promotionally why Weidman is headlining in Boston, and I have a good personal relationship with the guy. I consider him a friend, but I really hope Dominic Reyes uses this as a rallying cry and tries to get people to recognize that you don't walk out as a New Yorker in TD Garden and have the crowd eating out of your hands. You know,
I feel you, man. I feel Chris is a good dude, man, but
he's a great guy.
Like, listen, this is my town.
Yeah.
You don't have New Yorkers in there, and it's pissing you off, basically. But Ray had a nice counter. He had a nice counter, and I don't know. We'll see how we treat him over the next few weeks.
I promise I will take the high road if I am interviewing Chris Weidman inside the Octagon at TD Garden after the fight. But if that entire crowd is showering us with booze at that point in time, I will not mind. All right.
You're brutal.
UFC 240. Brutally honest. UFC 240, Holloway versus Edgar. Let us get back to it. I guess we exhausted the main event enough. Chris Cyborg, I thought she looked great on the feet against Felicia Spencer. One thing that a lot of fans were talking about was how maybe the narrative becomes Felicia Spencer on the broadcast, Kenny. But I do think that she's a big part of the narrative in this fight. She absorbed more significant strikes from Chris Cyborg than anyone has in Cyborg's Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
I think Spencer is a big game player, right? She's a full-time Algebra 1 teacher, so I think once she's able to not be teaching full-time, and by the way, she teaches at a virtual school, so the summer's her busiest time.
Wow.
So she's not able, I mean, she's having a full training camp, but imagine she's a full-time fighter, what she can do. I just think she has a lot of intangible qualities, not nervous at all fighting Chris Cyborg, that are going to really help her going forward. Featherweight rankings don't even exist right now for the women, so I don't know exactly what the future holds. But your thoughts on the co-main event and Chris Cyborg's rather dominant performance in my mind.
Listen, I thought it was a very impressive demonstration of heart by both women, first of all. Felicia Spencer took a lot of big shots from Cyborg. She never let that intimidate her or throw her off her game, and I think the intimidation factor from Cyborg comes in the form of her power, of her punches. And I think a lot of fighters kind of fold after that. Felicia Spencer was not one of them. Cyborg really had to, you know, continue landing shot after shot. And I think she was a little bit surprised after that first round that she was still sticking around there after all the damage that she put on her. But I think this was another dominant performance from Cyborg, one of the greatest female fighters that we have ever seen. And she was, you know, just dominant. She was able to stop a lot of those takedown attempts. And and come right back and stay in this fight consistently, putting out damage on Felicia Spencer, who continued to press forward herself. And I thought this was a great fight because of that.
Cyborg's still just 34 years old. So even though maybe she has lost a step, even though I can wonder aloud how competitive a rematch with Amanda Nunes would be, I still think that Cyborg is you know, number two in the world for sure, and certainly yeah. proved that against the very game Felicia Spencer. I think it's interesting to see where Cyborg goes from here, you know, because I think other than the Nunes fight in the UFC, I'm not sure what exactly there is for her. Mm-hmm. And if she does, as Dana White seems to suggest, maybe want to just prize fight and make the most amount of money right now, and have some fights that maybe aren't Amanda Nunes, I think there are going to be a lot of opportunities for her outside of this division. But one thing about the broadcast, I will say, the notion that there would be any promotional narrative that's discussed beforehand is absolutely ridiculous, right? Chris Cyborg was a huge favorite. She got opened up with a cut early. Felicia Spencer was making her second UFC start against this world beater. And sometimes the broadcast sort of deviates in that direction because you're so impressed with the fighter who is losing. But if right. you go back and listen to the broadcast, I thought Cyborg had a 10-8 in round three, right? Mm-hmm. I thought she was sharp as hell on the feet. I didn't think Spencer won any rounds. But seeing someone perpetually move forward in the direction of Cyborg's haymakers and be able to eat them seemingly without issue was very impressive. And as such, I think at times we chose to focus on that.
How dare you, sir? Twitter knows all. They know everything about how the broadcast works and how the UFC works together with you to create this very specific right. narrative.
Right. It's crazy. Yeah. And to think, too, that in Cyborg's last fight, and thank you. I mean, the criticisms that I take most seriously, and I do love the social media feedback, but when Ken Flo's like, dude, I think you guys were way off in that fight, I'm like, fuck. But no, I mean, it was the last fight on her contract. We didn't play up that angle necessarily, but hopefully we gave her enough credit. Right. And if not, please go watch the post show on ESPN Plus because we were heaping praise her way and she deserved all of it. All right, we'll see what's next for Chris Cyborg. And the other thing, too, I know Felicia Spencer didn't get a bonus. But hopefully this result and this performance maybe allows her to get a raise or a new contract and allows her to put the mathematics aside, because she did stay with us on Thursday, Kenny. Some people want to keep teaching, right, or keep doing what they're doing. Stipe sure. doesn't need to fight fires necessarily. He wants to keep doing that. And Felicia Spencer doesn't. She right. doesn't want to teach. She wants to train full time.
Yeah, 100%. And I will say this also in regards to the bonuses. You know, there's disclosed bonuses and then there's
right.
undisclosed bonuses, right. right, that fighters can make. So hopefully the UFC did give some extra coin to a well-deserved Felicia Spencer. You know, she really showed a lot of heart. And I look forward to seeing her in future fights.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the one thing I just can't emphasize enough, just how calm, cool, and collected she was during this fight week, right? Not to say that Yana Kunitskaya was intimidated by Chris Cyborg when she fought her, right? She took her down, took her back, I believe, at one point in time. But, man, Felicia Spencer was just so ready to go throughout fight week, and she was ready to go on fight night, and we congratulate her in defeat. She certainly was walking out of there with her head held high and with her stock going in the right direction. Jeff Neal, Nico Price, Ken Flo, not sure if you saw this fight or not, but Nico Price is a wild man, and as such, I think a very difficult fight for guys in the top 15 because he's willing to get knocked out, and sometimes, even when you have a great corner man like Saif Saud telling you not to brawl, sometimes it's easier said than done. Crazy moments in this fight, collision of heads. Jeff Neal did black out at one point in this fight, but ultimately was able to survive, get his first UFC bonus, and get his fourth consecutive win in as many tries in the UFC.
This was my concern for Jeff Neal when we were breaking down this fight on the podcast, because Nico Price has this amazing ability to get you to brawl with him. Neal was the more technical fighter. He was the more skillful guy, and I think he took the harder path to victory here, and it almost didn't work out for him. So I think, but in a lot of ways, this is kind of a fight that you need as a fighter to go, all right, listen, I learned a huge lesson from this. And if you learn a huge lesson from it and you still come out as the victor, that's a great thing. And I think for Jeff Neal, he's going to look back on that. He's going to be thankful that he could still win those kind of fights, but he doesn't have to fight those kind of fights.
Right.
He ended up getting it done against a very tough and large Nico Price. It was a great demonstration of heart and power, But I think Jeff Neal needs to establish himself as the more skillful guy from the get-go and not get caught into those kind of fights in the future.
Yeah, and I'm sure his head coach would echo all of those sentiments. And the non-martial artist me would only counter and just say, you know, the longer you go with someone like Nico Price, I just feel like he – and it's not that Nico's this crazy unorthodox fighter. You know, he's a pretty technical guy. He's well-coached. He's coachable. But nonetheless, your points are well taken, and congratulations to Jeff Neal. All right, just want to get a quick thought on not only the fight between Armand Sarukyan and Olivier Aubin-Mercier, but your boy George St. Pierre as well. So Sarukyan, 22 years old, born in Georgia, wins by unanimous decision. This is a tough one for OAM, Kenny. He's lost three consecutive fights after that four- or five-fight winning streak. George St. Pierre was training with him as much as four times a week for this fight. He added 4 pounds of muscle mass to an already big lightweight frame. But he also felt like Sarukyan, despite all of the UFC experience for OAM, was the best guy that he had ever faced. And I think this 22-year-old is going to be a real problem moving forward. Your thoughts on the fight, on GSP being such a huge part of this training camp and it not producing the desired result. What can you tell me about Sarukyan and Aubin-Mercier?
Yeah, you know, I think this was a fight that I didn't like from the outset. I think I talked about this on the last podcast and we broke things down on the Instagram Live. You know, and this was a tough one because this was not a great matchup for OAM. I think that, yeah, and this is what, the second or third fight in a row that I didn't really, style-wise, I didn't agree with the matchup. And I think that you need to take the right fights in your career. Right. And listen, I've certainly made those mistakes of taking the wrong fights at the wrong time, but you learn from this. But to do it two, three times in a row, I don't know about this one. And listen, you know, fighting with training with a high-level guy like a George St. Pierre is certainly going to help. It's not going to hurt you. However, you have to look at the style and say, is this the kind of guy that's going to help me for this particular fight? What is he going to help? What is he going to show me or give me that I can use for this particular fight? You know, I could train with John Jones every single day. And, at 5'9", you know, I don't know how much he's going to help me for my upcoming fights at lightweight. So you have to put it into context, and I think it will help. But, you know, you have to get ready for that specific fighter. So, listen, again, I don't want to take away from Sarukyan's performance. This was a guy that was really persistent with this takedown. He was a little wild at times. OAM did have his chances to capitalize, really wasn't able to do it at the right time. That knee was absolutely brutal. Looked like he hurt him with it, wasn't able to take him out. This is a young kid who's very tough and is only going to get better. He gained a lot of experience in this fight going 15 hard minutes.
Yeah, after going 15 hard minutes with Islam Makhachev, and you hate to sit here and anoint somebody at 22 years old, but man, this Armenian kid, I'm excited to see where he can go. I think he's managed by our buddy Danny Rube, I believe, as well. So maybe a future champion there for D. Rube, but congratulations to Armand Sarukyan and for OAM. Yeah, back-to-back-to-back now losses against Alexander Hernandez, Gilbert Dorino Burns, and Armand Sarukyan. All right, great show. UFC 240 is in the books. Congratulations to the bonus winners, Hakeem Dawodu, Jeff Neal. Of course, the flyweights turned in the fight of the night, Davison Figueiredo, Alexandre Pantoja. Shout out to our buddy Derek Thompson on the UFC crew. He thought that would be the fight of the night. It was. Congrats to Eric Koch, successful in the welterweight debut. And Jillian Robertson, 4-1 in the UFC. 4 finishes, gets her first career TKO. Congratulations to Jillian, and hopefully there is a discretionary bonus in the mail for her. All right. Moving forward now, UFC Fight Night, Covington versus Lawler. We get to the pronunciation of the week. TJ, 5-7 on the year, hit on Hakeem Dawodu last week. Next up, this Nigerian represents Fortis MMA, the team we just spoke about. Light heavyweight, 6-1 after losing his UFC debut in Philly earlier this year to Paul Craig. TJ DeSantis, of whom am I speaking?
Kennedy Njuku.
Njuku. Are you trying to drop an Njokuani on me? Let's hear how the fighter says it.
Kennedy Njuku. Kennedy Njuku.
All right, so you got to ignore the second time he says it, right, because he's slowing it down. But it's Kennedy Njuku. Final answer. That's what we go with on broadcast. The first time he says it, Njuku. TJ, you were close. You just left out a syllable there, I believe.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say that my lower mandible's injured, so...
All right. By the way, did you like hearing your voice all over that UFC broadcast with those Felicia Spencer calls?
Yeah, I like that. That was good. Where's my check?
I feel like I know it's a check's in the mail. I feel like you kind of undersold her chances a little bit on the podcast last week.
You know, I'll happily say I got it wrong. She didn't win. She didn't have any business, right. You know, taking a scorecard right. by any means. But heart of a lion there. Yeah.
Did you see her? Sorry, TJ, I was going to ask, did you see her going three hard rounds on the feet with Cyborg?
I did not. Yeah. I thought that she could slow it down maybe and survive, but I didn't see her seeing the final bell and pleasantly surprised. And I was like Joe Rogan after, the second part of the second round going, I want three more. Let's go.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not trying to throw you under the bus saying you undersold her chances because you're right. She did get dominated, but again, I think my biggest takeaway from the fight, at least on her side, was that she is so utterly unintimidated by the bright lights and fighting someone like Chris Cyborg that I'm very excited to see her next fight. And I think when you're a fighter like that in that spot, that's what you're hoping to do is make people want to see you fight again. And you can certainly count me among those. All right, let us get now to the picks for UFC Fight Night Covington versus Lawler in the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, main event challenge comes to you today courtesy of Meraki BJJ, MerakiBJJ.com. Kids jiu-jitsu classes all ages 5 through 15. You can go to the website for more details or call the gym to have someone in a gi answer your call. 424-292-8280. Kemflo, who you got answering the phones today at Meraki BJJ? I will sit there. I'd rather sit there at the desk than have to train, I think.
We got our guy Stefano Mota over there, our program director, doing a great job.
Does the program director wear a gi at the front desk or no?
He does not. Sometimes. Maybe
no gi desk. It's a no gi desk.
The no gi desk for the most part.
Yeah. MerakiBJJ.com. It was 96-96 going into UFC 240. Ian Parker sweeps the main card.
Dope!
Five favorites, but they all cash. Also had Max Holloway by unanimous decision. Kenflo had a pretty good week in his own right, 4-for-5, but Team Anik wins the week 7-4, regains the lead 103-100. Heading into UFC Fight Night, Covington versus Lawler. Ian Parker is back. Good week for you, my friend. How you doing this Monday morning?
I'm good. I'm glad we got the lead back. Had a feeling that was going to happen. I don't hear too much talk on Kenny's end, and I think because Kenny lost, he should be the one answering the phones at his own gym.
Listen, I got a question. Why the hell does he get 3 points? Didn't he pick a favorite?
I'm glad you brought this up because a listener brought this up with me.
Okay.
And I think you might be onto something. So here's the deal, okay? So right. When you pick a main event and a co-main event, you give us the winner, the round, and the method of victory, right? But this listener pointed out to me that there's too much incentive to pick fighters to win by decision, because if you get decision right as the method of victory, you also get a point for the round. You see what
right.
I'm saying?
Gotcha.
So
yeah,
Max
yeah.
Holloway, he gets a point for the win, a point for the decision, and a point for the round. Because if I don't give him a point for the round and somebody else goes round two by TKO, you're getting an opportunity to cash 3 times, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it's tricky because then if you get the method of victory right for a decision, you're automatically getting the round point. So
right. Because that's what happened last week with Edwards, right? When I got the Edwards pick, I
exactly.
got the 3. Okay.
Right. So that's the way do it. And, you know, if someone has a better idea, you can certainly hit me up, John_Anik on Twitter. Let's get to it, though. Co-main event, New Jersey. Jim Miller -175 versus Clay Guida +145. Ian Miller extending his UFC record here, making his 33rd UFC appearance, number 28 on the other side for Clay Guida, who was submitted by Kenny Florian 10 years ago at UFC 107. You like what I did there? Guida did beat BJ Penn, though, in his last fight. That was UFC 237 back in May. Saw his fight with Diego Sanchez inducted into the Hall of Fame earlier this month. He should have a lot of motivation here, Ian, as underdog against Jim Miller. How do you see the co-main going down in Newark?
Well, it's an interesting co-main event. I think this is going to be a Jim Miller send-off, and I think it's the right fight for him. Look, Clay Guida did not he impresses us against Joe Lauzon, and then he, you know, then he loses to Oliveira expected, and then he comes in against BJ as a huge favorite. And yes, he turns it on at the end, but at one point, BJ was handling the striking okay. That fight should have been finished way earlier. I think Jim's win over in his last fight was way more impressive. It showed he still has something left in the tank. I think his striking is going to be better. I think he's better everywhere than Clay, minus the cardio, but Jim's never really shown us that's an issue. I think Jim Miller is going to get this done. I don't see Clay. He's going to bounce around, do his striking. This will hit the floor at some point. I think Jim's going to win this. I'll even say rare naked choke, and I think he'll lay the gloves down, call it a career, get a win at home. I'm going with Jim Miller.
Jim Miller, rear naked choke. What round?
Oh yeah, I have to give that right. I'm gonna go round two. Sorry, round two. Otherwise,
round two, rear naked choke for Jim Miller. Ken Flo, he continues to battle Lyme disease, still able to stay active through it, but it has not been easy for Jim Miller over the last few years. That said, this is going to be his fifth fight in 16 months, coming off a quick win over Jason Gonzalez. That was April 27th. Close fight in my mind on paper, Kenny. What do you think about Guida and Jim Miller?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one, and I think it's a match that is well made here between two guys who've been around the game for a very long time. You know, if someone's going to win the wrestling battle here, I think it's probably going to be Miller. I think Miller is certainly the better striker in the clinch, but Clay Guida has a way of just throwing everything off with his unorthodox style and rhythm. And it can really pose problems for Jim Miller if he's expecting your traditional striking approach. But I agree with Ian here. I think Jim Miller will get it done. I'm not sure if he gets the finish here. I'm going to go with a Jim Miller decision on Saturday.
Jim Miller by decision. See, Ken Flo already thinking now, hey, man, you give me the round point for the goddamn decision.
Going for it.
I'm sure there's an algorithm that would suggest, and we do have somebody on Twitter, and I apologize that I don't know his name, that is tracking all of these results in the main event challenge. And I do believe
Brady
there's
Miller.
Probably
Brady Miller.
There you go. I do believe there's an algorithm out there that would exist that would suggest that long-term maybe picking when we're forcing you guys to pick by decision is actually the way to go, in which case we would have to tweak the scoring system for 2020 if the podcast still exists. Of course it'll still exist. Are you kidding me? Started in 2015. All right, main event. Former UFC interim welterweight champion Colby Covington minus 230 against the former undisputed champ Robbie Lawler, who is plus 190. We will need the round and the method of victory. We did conduct a quick poll at Anik Florian Pod this morning. At last check, about 1,510 votes, 63% of the masses like Robbie Lawler as betting underdog. Ken Flo, Covington back for the first time since winning the interim belt at UFC 225 last June. That was his only fight in 2018. So I think a lot of people forget just how damn good this guy is because he just hasn't fought all that often.
Right.
I believe Covington deserves the distinction as the betting favorite. The question is, Flo, does he get it done against Robbie Lawler?
Yeah, and he's got a style that really could pose a lot of problems for Robbie Lawler. Colby, when he decides to go out there and wrestle and grind you down, is going to be difficult for anyone in the world. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. He has a tremendous chin as well if he does get in trouble. And I think he needs to do that early on. He needs to fight a very similar fight to how he fought Rafael Dos Anjos. And I think if he's able to do that, it could go very well for him. And he could pull off the decision win. Robbie Lawler, though, I think that if we see the Robbie Lawler that came out against Ben Askren, I think Colby Covington could be in some serious trouble. Lawler can certainly crack. He'll have the speed advantage with his hands. This is a guy that also really knows how to wrestle, and he's not as small as Rafael Dos Anjos. This guy is a lot bigger for the welterweight division, and I think he's been in a lot of great fights. We forget his battles against guys like Johnny Hendricks and Rory McDonald. Carlos Condit, the guy is an absolute legend, a for sure Hall of Famer, in my opinion. And a guy who I think, you know, if Colby gets a little cocky or doesn't have his hands up or isn't circling to the right side, I think can really get in trouble early. I think Robbie Lawler gets it done. I'm going to go with TKO in round three.
Round three, TKO for Robbie Lawler, the pick to click for Ken Flo, who brings up a lot of salient points there, Ian Parker. Robbie Lawler, was that a sneeze?
Yes, I apologize.
Bless you. Robbie Lawler was in the shape
Thank
of his
you.
Life, Kenny. Absolutely was in the shape of his life going into that Ben Askren fight. That was UFC 235 back in March. I'm not trying to take anything away from Ben Askren. I'm just not sure there's much of anything to read into that result on the Lawler side at all. I expect a prime Robbie Lawler here. Ian, what do you think about Robbie Lawler and his chances to spring the upset and prevent Colby Covington from getting that shot at the undisputed title?
I am surprised that this Robbie's as big as a dog as he is, even though Colby, interim, non-interim, whatever it is. I want to throw out a couple of facts here. Colby Covington, his last four wins, Brian Barberina decision, Dong Hyun Kim decision, Damian Maia decision, Rafael Dos Anjos decision. All right. Here's my issue with, and listen, Colby's done what he's had to do, and he's done a great job marketing himself, regardless whether it's, you know, the good guy, the bad guy, the face, the heel, however you want to call it. I think the level of competition may pose a little bit of a problem here. His biggest opponent has been RDA, and Robbie has fought way higher than RDA, even though he did lose to him and lost by decision. I think this is a bad matchup for Colby. I think Colby has fought guys that he is bigger than or stronger than in wrestling. Robbie's takedown defense is phenomenal. He's a good wrestler in his own right, to Kenny's point. He's definitely going to be the better striker here. And I think, John, to your point, there wasn't a lot to read with the loss against Ben Askren. But the one thing I do want to mention that fight is that he stopped the takedown and he picked Ben and powerbombed him on his fucking head. And no one has done that to Ben Askren. You know, if you talk to people that have wrestled with Askren, they say it's like messing with a silverback gorilla. And Robbie picked him up like it was his child, you know? So I don't know if Colby is going to present or shoot in a different way that Ben possibly could. I think Robbie keeps this fight standing, and I do think he could finish this fight. Because Kenny chose round three, I got to go either lower or higher. I'm going to go Price is Right style, and I'm going to go round two and say that Robbie Lawler gets the finish in round two.
All right, a couple underdog plays there on Robbie Lawler, and we did throw that poll out on Twitter, and I think some fans suggested that it was more of a popular vote or a vote that was sort of rooted in popularity. But a lot of people who I know are voting in that poll are sharp handicapping types who certainly see some value in Robbie Lawler this weekend. Ian Parker, great stuff, my man. We will talk to you in less than 7 days. Thanks, bud.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Ian Parker. Making the picks on the Main Event Challenge. We got to get out of here. Thank you all for listening. There is a slight chance we are off next Monday, August 5th. We are trying to find a window that will accommodate all schedules. If we are back, we will certainly preview UFC Fight Night from Uruguay. Liz Carmouche getting a title shot against Valentina Shevchenko. If not, you can be sure we will be loaded up the following Monday, August 12th, for UFC 241, Cormier versus Miocic 2. We'll also have live coverage on Anik Florian Pod on Instagram on most Saturdays now moving forward, at least for a little bit, on fight day. With that, enjoy UFC Fight Night on ESPN this weekend. Don't forget prelims at noon, main card 3 p.m. Eastern. Ken Flo, what time are you hitting those beautiful gray mats today at Meraki BJJ?
Oh, I'm there in an hour.
All day.
I'm there
all
in an hour.
All fucking
teaching, day. Teaching at noon, yes.
So if you want a picture...
Just go
over
there.
Don't interrupt his training schedule unless you're telling him you listen to the Anakin Florian podcast. All right,
that's
Ken
right.
Flo, have a great training session today for TJ DeSantis and Ken Flo. John Anderson, so long for now. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the fights on Saturday. And we'll talk to you next week. Go fuck it later.
The preceding podcast was a TJ DeSantis production. Comments, questions, and inquiries can be directed to DeSantisProd@gmail.com.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.